The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 170.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hey guys, welcome to today's live stream. It is Sunday afternoon. I'm right here, still in the temporary office in Phoenix, Arizona. Went out with some buddies last night, had a great time. It's been an awesome weekend. Had dinner Friday night with my good buddy, Robert Kiyosaki, and he was telling me some incredible stories. A couple of them I think you guys would really, really like to hear. So maybe, probably don't have time today, but maybe if we have a little time, I could go over a few of them that I think you guys would really get a kick out of hearing. Just as a reminder, and this is something we've been really having an issue with all week long. Well, it's been for quite some time, but it's just getting crazy the last couple weeks, is an issue I'm having with scammers. And if you guys watched my last video, you probably saw that it was just inundated with, I don't know if they're humans or bots or whatever the heck they are, but basically what's happening is there's people who are trying to scam you out of your money, who are stealing my picture, and they're somehow setting up an account that is George Gammon. It says George Gammon, but if you click on it, it only has like, you know, one subscriber or something like that. So you always got to click on the account, and that's usually the giveaway. But people are doing it on YouTube, they're doing it on Twitter, they're doing it on Instagram, pretty much any social media outlet, and they're posing as me. They go into the comments and say, hey, call this WhatsApp number, or hey, this guy is awesome at crypto. I gave him this amount. He, you know, increased it 10x. Call this guy on WhatsApp. It's all utter BS. These are scammers. I've actually called them myself, believe it or not. And I didn't tell them who I was, right? And I acted as someone else, as someone, you know, someone that got hooked into their scam, just so I could see it. And what happens is you call, then they want to do a video call to make sure that it's a human being. And then you call and it goes into a call center, and you can tell that no one speaks English, nobody. So you know, it's like, and listen, I've been to over 40 countries. I couldn't figure out what the accent was. So I don't know where the hell they're calling you from. But then they try to find the one guy, like the closer guy in the boiler room that actually speaks English. And then they try to get you to give them like, I don't know, like 20 grand or something like that to, you know, invest in crypto. Just don't buy it. Don't even, just totally ignore it. I know it's hard, especially my last video where literally every single comment is a stupid scam posing as me. But on my end, just FYI, I've got Sebastian, I've got Adriana, I've got my people, all the resources that I have, I've got them calling YouTube, I've got them emailing YouTube and all the social media platforms to try to get rid of this problem, because it's a really, really an issue. So anyway, we'll move on from there. And for Rebel Capitalist Pro, I always want to do my quick pitch here at the beginning. If you guys haven't checked out my investment forum with my amazing partners, Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh, you got to check it out. If you're wondering what you should do to protect your wealth or to build wealth and thrive, whether we have deflation, inflation, we know we've got this world of out of control central banks and big governments. So if you want to increase your returns or increase your knowledge base, you got to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. That's at georgegammon.com/pro. Check it out right now. We've got a $1 trial offer. You're going to love it. All right, let's go right into the questions. That's why you guys are here. So Juan, I think this is the gentleman, if I remember correctly, Juan, you're in Medellin. And he says, hello, George from South Florida. Oh, I guess you're in South Florida, okay. Why did you choose in 2011 to buy property in Kansas City and not another place in the United States? Well, So, well, as you know, Juan, I retired in 2012, so I had to figure out what to do with the money I came to the conclusion that real estate was probably cheap. I wanted to be like Jim Rogers and buy stuff when it's cheap and sell it when it's expensive. So you guys know that story. I won't go into that. But I was actually dating this gal that was a model in New York City. And I, at the time, was in Las Vegas. I had a place there. And so she had family in Kansas City. So, you know, when we'd want to meet up or whatever, I'd fly her into Kansas City. I'd fly to Kansas City and we'd hang out with her family. And her family's great. I'm still really good friends with them. But so one night we were out and we were, you know, having some beers and and her family, they're kind of in construction. Well, they do a variety of things, but kind of construction. And they're telling me how you could buy these houses at the tax foreclosure auction for like $5,000. I'm like, what? Okay. So, you know, your spidey senses kind of go up and you're like, okay, something doesn't sound right there, because if you could buy a house that cheap, why isn't everyone there bidding up the price? I know how free market works. So I just did more research and I found out why they were $5,000, but it seemed like a good opportunity. So even that night prior to me doing the research, I'm like, okay, well, listen, why didn't you guys buy any of the houses? Like, we don't have the money. I'm like, okay, well, I got money. So if I buy the houses and if I give you the money to fix them up, you guys fix them up, we'll just split profits. And they said, yeah, that sounds great. So that's why I did the homework. And that's why I started investing in real estate in Kansas City in 2012. That's the backstory. I wish I had a way to post a picture here. I'd show you a picture back in 2012 with me, and I'm sure I've got one of me and the gal and her family and all that stuff. They're great, great people. I'm still really good friends with them. Okay, next question. What piece of information acquired was the moment you knew for sure you were going to be a rich man? Boy, I don't know if there was a moment. I mean, probably the first time I looked at my checking account and I had $1 million in it. That's when it kind of dawned on me that I've done all right so far. That wasn't the grand sum of my assets, but that was just in my checking account. And obviously back then I knew nothing about the FDIC. I knew nothing about the counterparty risk of the banking system. This was way, 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 way before I got into macro. This probably would have been 2000, maybe six or something. Anyway, I think if I had to kind of answer that question right at the top of my head, that was pretty impactful, because for me growing up, you know, now $1 million isn't that big of a deal. But for me growing up, you know, that $1 million is a big deal. Like if you could be a millionaire like that, you've made it. And so just looking at my checking account statement and showing $1 million, that's kind of when, you know, it gives you a good feeling. Next question. George, as a freedom seeking individual, do you register yourself in the countries you stay, or do you just leave every few months? Do you have to do tax returns for you? Well, that's a good question. And that I don't like to be a tax resident of any place other than Puerto Rico. So now, of course, as you guys know, right now I'm helping out some family members here in Phoenix. So obviously that takes priority over everything, but it the way I normally live, let's say, I don't like to stay in one place more than 6 months, because that's when you go from being a tourist, usually, to a tax resident. So when I'm getting close to the 6 month mark, I'm out. Let's go have fun somewhere else for a few months. And I rarely, even in Medellin, I spend a lot of time in Medellin, but I don't spend more than 6 months a year there. It's kind of on and off. So that's kind of how I like to do it. And for more info on how to do that, I check out my good buddy Andrew Henderson's site called Nomad Capitalist, or Simon Black, another favorite of mine. And he has a site called sovereignman.com. And I think that flag theory, is it flag theory? It's flag something. It's kind of that type of lifestyle. But for me, that's how I like to live. I kind of get bored. I've got ADD quite badly. And so I get bored if I'm in one place for 3 or 4 months. I'm like, okay, let's go check out Dubai. Let's go check out Eastern, let's go check out another place in the world and go, let's have another adventure. Do I think the U.S. should divide into 2 or more countries? Oh boy. I don't know if that solves any problems. I haven't thought that through, Matt. What I can tell you is I interviewed my good buddy, Doug Casey, the other day. He was up in Aspen, and I was talking to him, and he thinks the Western part of the United States will try to secede. So California, Oregon, Washington. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I don't know if he is using the words civil war. He might have been, but you check out that interview I did with Doug, and he has given it a lot more thought than I have. I'm just trying to think through how that would work. I mean, you'd have 2 different currencies. You have, I'm not sure. Like anything, it's trade-offs. There's no solutions. And it always goes back to the quote from my favorite economist, Thomas Sowell. And I think if you're thinking through this, Matt, that's what I'd strongly suggest using as your framework, right? Like if you see something that would be a benefit, know that there also has to be a cost. And because we're dealing with scarce resources with alternative uses. And resources, and I'm not just talking about oil and capital and those things. I'm talking about, even the time that you have in the day is a scarce resource with limited or with alternative uses. So that's how I'd suggest, or that's the framework I'd suggest using when you're trying to kind of go through that thought experiment on your own. Jackie, are you concerned about food and water shortages? If so, how are you preparing? Well, I think in today's society, I don't know if concerned would be the right word. I think cognizant would be a better word, because concerned would imply that I'm like losing sleep over it. And life's short. I don't think we should be losing sleep over anything, but we should be prepared. And yeah, especially in a country like the United States, where we grow a lot of food, but it's not a lot of the food is grown locally. We have all these supply chains that could go down. And let me tell you a story. When I was first started traveling to South America, I was going down to Ecuador quite a bit. And I was hanging out in this surf village off the coast of Ecuador called Montanita. And it's very, very famous in South America. So it's the top like surfing spot, right? And it's this very kind of bohemian town. Everyone's a hippie and smoking weed and listening to Bob Marley and all these things. But it's, and when I say town, I mean, it's maybe, minus the tourists, there's probably 1,000 people, the population. And it's just like, maybe 10 blocks. That's the whole town. It's like a little village, really. Anyway, my point is one morning I woke up and I went down to my favorite little fruit stand to get a fruit salad for breakfast. And I went about my day. I went to the gym. I did, I can't remember what else I did, but it went to, I think it dawned on me around 1 p.m. And because I was at lunch somewhere, and everything there is outdoor. And for whatever reason, I think I might have gone to the bathroom, and I flipped on the light switch, and the lights didn't turn on. And I said, okay, well, that's weird. And then I went and talked to the guy. He's like, oh yeah, the electricity has been out for like 24 hours. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, yeah, it's been out for like 24 hours. I didn't even know. I literally did not know. So life just functioned. Like, people are walking around, people are going to the restaurants, people are getting food. Why? People pay with cash. There's very, very limited use with the credit cards there, if any at all. But you see, my point is that there's some places in the world where if the entire grid goes down, and you know, the things that we look at the a developed world being susceptible to, there are areas where that's like, whatever. As long as the plumbing works and they have a sufficient source of water that's close, it doesn't really matter too much. So Medellin, as an example, is a place where I like a lot because it's not just this bohemian surf village. It's a very upscale city with 4 million people, but they grow, and of course they import a lot of their food, but they grow so much food just within a 5-mile radius of that place that I've looked into it, but I would assume that they could feed the entire population very easily with what they just grow locally, if not within 10 miles, within 100 miles. So even though supply chains break down, it's not that big of a deal. So my point there is that if you're thinking about this prudently and trying to have a plan B, that's why I always say you got to have a passport. You got to have a passport, for heaven's sakes. And if you've got a passport, try to get a second one. At the very least, have a visa like I have. So I've got an investor visa for Colombia, where I can go in and out of the country for 10 years. I'm in. They can't not let me in. Well, I guess they could, but you see what I'm saying? That I'm on the path there to be getting a citizenship, another passport, so I have dual citizenship, or maybe St. Lucia. That's another one that I thought about. You know, we get really excited about the potential of gold and Bitcoin because they're kind of outside of the system. And we think, oh my gosh, if I just have, you know, Bitcoin, the system can collapse around me and I'll be fine. Or if I just have my gold coins, I'll be fine. No, you won't. No. Because you're forgetting that the wealth isn't that gold coin. The wealth isn't the Bitcoin. The wealth is goods and services, right? If you're on a deserted island and you've got a billion Bitcoins, or you've got $1 billion, you've got $1 billion worth of gold. So are you rich or poor? You're poor because the only thing you got is a coconut and some salt water. You see? So you've got to have that passport to get the hell out of Dodge if you need to. And it can happen quickly. Look at what happened with the Cerveza sickness. I don't know if I was in the Virgin Islands or if I was in St. Bart's, but like almost overnight, you look at the news and they're not letting Americans in anywhere. Like, you're trapped in the United States, even with a gringo passport. That goes to show how quickly these things can change. So that's what I would really think through is, okay, you know, understand the grid and everything you're talking about, be cognizant of it. I wouldn't lose sleep over it, but I would be very motivated to make sure, number one, I've got a passport. Number two, I've got potentially a second one or a visa to where I have a plan B so I could go to XYZ place if I needed to or wanted to, that wasn't as susceptible to, you know, whatever problem with a supply chain. Okay, so my friend owns two houses in Vegas, primary residence. They have 70K equity and an investment property they have 30K that rents for. I don't know, Bond, James Bond, because I don't know what their cost basis is. I don't know what the RV ratio is unless I know the value of the property. So I can't really help you too much there. What are my thoughts on physical bullion-backed crypto products? Mike, I'm under the opinion that one of the things that has destroyed the fundamentals of our economy is the financialization of not just our economy, but the global economy. So as you guys know, I'm a long-term Bitcoin bull. Short-term, right now, to be honest with you, I'm a little hesitant, because whenever I see them just pushing it down our throats on CNBC, or whenever I see people getting really emotional about it on Twitter, I went out with some individual. Let's just put it this way. I went out with some individuals the other night that were in their mid-20s, and they have zero clue. They're basically Moody the millennial, right? Minus the blue hair and the love for rioting. Sorry, millennials. And just to be clear, I know I gave you guys a real hard time on my last video, but it's all in good fun. I don't think through that stuff, to be honest with you. When I just draw the character. When I'm just talking in front of the camera, usually it's just kind of whatever comes out. But if that was the first video that you've watched of mine and you're a millennial, just to be clear, I make fun of millennials. I make fun of politicians. I make fun of guys and gals on FinTwit. I make fun of myself. I make fun of everybody. So I just try to add a little bit of color and some fun and, just into those videos. So please don't take anything like that personally. But my point is that whenever I see Bitcoin, which I love, I love the philosophy behind it, but I love it because it's decentralized. I love it because it takes us back to focusing on producing goods and services, not just making money by financializing Bitcoin or crypto. I mean, what are we doing? We're trying to make derivatives with crypto and with gold and everything else. That's how we got here. That's the problem. So I'm not saying that these things don't have value, and I'm not saying that they're not potentially a good maybe speculation. But what I am saying is I get very concerned that we're going from the frying pan into the fire type thing with more financialization of things that should or would hopefully alleviate us from the financialized economy.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
How long are they going to continue to distort free markets? And then to add to that, when will the bailouts or the madness of the bailouts end? I think it's all about asset prices, Josh. I think it's just that, and that's why you haven't seen stimulus. I mean, there's a variety of reasons because of what's going on politically and kind of the bottleneck there. But really, at the end of the day, if the market would have continued to crash, or if in the last month or so, or if in the last month the market would have gone down again by, let's say, 20 or 30%, they would have gone right to the old stimulus once again. That's really the trigger. They understand they have to continue to prop up asset bubbles, or else we're done. The economy's done. If we get a big deleveraging, it's at least a nominal deleveraging or nominal decrease in asset prices, you've got big problems. So I think that's, you know, when does it end? I don't think it ends until the whole thing collapses as a result of the bailout madness, because there's no free lunch. I was just going back and forth with Brent on this, not remember back and forth, but I didn't have much time. So I was fascinated by the conversation. I can't remember who was in there. I think Luke might've been a part of the little Twitter thread or something. And my thing, because we were talking about Japan and how they did a lot of quantitative easing, but yet they didn't experience any type of hyperinflation. And the thing that I always get hung up on with that is, if you can print money without the fear of inflation, then what are we doing? Like, why are we working? Why don't we just write, give everyone a check for $10 million and just kick back and we've eradicated poverty? Everyone knows that won't work. So, but then you have to reverse engineer it and say, well, why? Right. And so then thinking through what happened in Japan with their quantitative easing and what we've done here, what they've done in Europe. And then you have to, I think for me at least, and that's one reason why I like the Austrian School of Economics, because they're always doing thought experiments and taking things to kind of an extreme to understand things in the middle a little bit better. And that's really how I learn. And that's why I always do this stuff on Twitter. And most of my whiteboard videos, as you guys know, I take things kind of to an extreme. And it's to help me and hopefully other people to really think things through more clearly, right? So that's the extreme I like to use, you know, is if we never have to worry about deflation again, then again, why not just give everyone a $10 million check and we're done, right? We've solved poverty. We live in a utopia now. Well, okay, so then the question is, well, okay, that wouldn't work. So why wouldn't it work? Would it work some places better than other places? As an example, they didn't spend the money as quickly, therefore creating the inflation. I would argue that would wildly misallocate resources, which would destroy the economy even further. And that would kind of be the release valve for the free lunch, if you will. But then it comes back to, okay, well, if they've all done quantitative easing, and then that means that quantitative easing probably hasn't increased broad money, or said better, that quantitative easing hasn't increased the amount of deposits in the commercial banking system, or as Snyder always says, you know, bank liabilities. So then you have to say, okay, well then the quantitative easing really isn't money printing, quote unquote, if that's how we're defining it. And then it takes you down this rabbit hole, right? So my point is, I don't see how they stop the bailouts. You would have to have, and I don't know if you guys saw my interview with Jeff and with Lynn, but that was one of the things that I asked Jeff. I said, can the economy, and I was talking about the United States economy, actually recover? And like a real recovery, not a fake Band-Aid, which is, QE or whatever financial tricks the Fed and the government pull. But can the economy really get healthy again without solving the problem of the euro dollar system? And he said, no, it can't. So then you ask the question, well, how do you solve the euro dollar system problem? And there's several ways it could happen, but the most likely way is that it's got to collapse. It's got to collapse to the point where the politicians and Klaus and everyone, they just don't have a choice but to submit and say, okay, this is our biggest problem right now, period. And then figure out a way to fix it, hopefully with a bottoms up type of approach. And so a lot of the people think that Bitcoin will create that type of chain reaction, and it may short term. I don't know long term how that would play out, but I'm actually talking to Raul tomorrow morning, and hopefully we can get on this topic of a new monetary system. What would that look like, and how would crypto play into that? And is it possible to have a one global decentralized money? Let's call it Bitcoin. And there is no other money. So basically, you're going back to what gold was in, let's say, the 1800s or the 1700s. And that was money in and of itself. And I guess it kind of still is. But does Bitcoin play that role? And if it does, how does it differ from what from a 30,000 foot level of what we dealt with and how things worked in the 1700s and the 1800s? And that's one reason why I did that video the other day on full reserve banking, free banking, and how that morphed into the banks being nationalized and us having the Fed, Bretton Woods, and the euro dollar system that we have today. That was all done under a gold standard. So then the question becomes, does Bitcoin solve that? Okay, so Steve and Jeff say we have deflation. If true, well, again, I don't know if it's deflation or disinflation. That those are two different things. If true, why are rich getting richer and poor getting poorer with asset prices at all-time high? So they're most likely talking about price disinflation, consumer price disinflation. Be tough to argue we haven't had inflation in asset prices. So if true, why are rich getting richer? Or getting poor with asset. Well, I mean, why? Because the rich own the assets. I don't know how I can answer your question other than that, AJ. The rich own the assets, the poor don't. So when the asset prices go up, the rich get richer and the poor don't. But one thing I would point out, I don't know if your question is getting at this, but remember that inflation and deflation doesn't happen to everything at once. And you can have asset prices going down in nominal terms while consumer prices are going up. You could have consumer prices or the increase in consumer prices going down, disinflation, while asset prices are going way, way up. The dollar can be getting stronger on the DXY, if that's your measurement, while the CPI in the United States can be going up. In other words, the dollar is getting weaker against goods and services. So you've got a lot of moving parts there. People like to assume that they like to think in terms of black and white. So if we have inflation, so if we have consumer price inflation, then assets inflate, or it doesn't work that way. Look at the 1970s. That's the example I always use. So in the 1970s, obviously we had consumer price inflation, but the stock market, the S&P from 72 to 74 went down by almost 50% in nominal terms. In nominal terms. In real terms, it went down way more than that. So it's... you got to remember, and that's just what I wanted to point out here with your question. I don't know if you're kind of getting at that or not, but I haven't looked into platinum. The question is, what do you think of platinum? I think Len was talking to me about platinum the other day on the live stream that we did for Rebel Capitalist Pro. Yeah, I think she was talking about that. My memory serves me right. Yeah, but I have not looked into it. I mean, for me, it wouldn't be a store of value. Just that's how I wouldn't think of it that way. I'd think of it as a speculation. So I don't know if that gives you any insight. But check out Lynn's blog and her website, because usually when her and I talk about things with the Rebel Capitalist Pro members, she's obviously given a lot of thought.
And a lot of times she's written about it on her blog. So I would point you in that direction. Yeah. So do you recommend commodities and emerging in the short term, emerging markets? Yeah. Many analysts believe dollar weakness overdone and due for short term reversal. Yeah. I mean, it's tough, Brandon, to really focus on the short term. I try to, well, let me put it to you this way. I like looking at the short term stuff and thinking through it, but I don't use it to, it doesn't sway my investment decision-making process, right? Like Bitcoin's a good example of that. I'm not going to sell Bitcoin just because I think it's way overbought short-term, because I'm not holding it for a month, or I'm not trading it. I'm holding it for 10 years, 15 years. And so I don't try to time the markets. I do like commodities. It's tough for me to give investment advice. I don't know your personal situation, so I wouldn't give investment advice, but I would tell you that I think commodities are interesting right now. I bought a lot of them back in March when there was panic in the markets. Like going back to Jim Rogers, you know, he likes to buy things when they're cheap, sell when they're expensive. He likes to buy panic and he likes to sell hysteria. And that's straight from his interviews in the Market Wizards book. So if you haven't, that was an interview he did with Jack Schwager, I believe in the late 1980s. It was either the late 1980s or early 1990s. And that really sums up kind of his investment philosophy, which I've tried to incorporate into my own style. That's what seems natural to me. But yeah, I think commodities there's some interesting, you know, they're definitely not in a hyper bubble like everything else. So there could be some opportunity there. And also, I like to buy things that pay me to own them. That's my definition of an investment. And there's some commodity producers that pay you a good dividend. Well, stock market outlook, if there's a vaccine. Oh, I see. Vaccine-related illness or death. Who knows? I mean, logically, you'd say, oh, the stock market would go down, but any news is good news. Good news is good news. Bad news is good news. Because if you get bad news, that means, oh, stimulus, stimulus, stimulus. That means the heroin addict's getting more heroin. That's all that matters. As long as it doesn't, you know, there's a complete detachment from the stock market and the real economy. I mean, they're not even. They have no correlation whatsoever, almost an inverse correlation. So who knows? I mean, right now we've been in this for 10 years that any news is good news. So when will that change? I think is an interesting question, is when the government put no longer works. So I think we've gone from a Fed put. And whether it was psychological or not, you know, we could debate that. But back in March, when the Fed just threw everything at it, including the kitchen sink, and the market still basically went FU and tanked 1,000 points the next day. That was, remember when they were supposed to have their meeting on a Wednesday, they had it on a Sunday, an emergency meeting. They dropped rates down to zero, and then they announced QE Infinity and all the repo stuff. And the market just basically kind of looked at them and just gave the bird next day and just tanked by another 1,000 points. And the market didn't start to go back up until the government came out with their fiscal stimulus package. So to me, that kind of signals that, hey, the Fed put psychologically or literally, it might be gone. And we've gone to a government put. So you say, well, that can last forever. Well, not necessarily. Look at Japan. Japan's been doing a government put and a central bank put, and their market has still gone down. It's still lower in nominal terms than it was in 1990, for heaven's sake. So is their real estate market. So if we see the market just crashing, like we saw in March, the Fed coming out with everything, which they will, the government coming out with a $10 trillion stimulus package, and the market basically give the government the bird, then you know, well, in my opinion, that would be game over. And that's when it goes in reverse, to where instead of any news is good news, then any news is bad news. And then it's time to pay the fiddler. So Josh is asking my opinion on real estate in Scottsdale. It all depends on the RV ratio, Josh. I mean, if you can find a super, super motivated seller and get something cheap where you can get a good RV ratio with your cost basis, could be interesting. But I think if you're just asking me just broad stroke, I don't think you're going to get a very good RV ratio there. So I wouldn't, if I had a place, I'd want to take my equity out, whether that's selling it or do a cash out refi, invest the equity elsewhere. Do you suspect real estate in Europe will maintain value as an, now that's the problem. These things hop around so fast. Do you expect real estate in Europe to maintain value as an asset, or will it go Japanese and CSEC? Well, I mean, Europe is a big place, Nick. I'm not sure which country you're referring to. I mean, I think there's some real estate plays in areas like Portugal and Eastern Europe where they're worth cheap, cheap, cheap. But then there's places like Denmark where they've had, I think Denmark's that place where they had a couple negative rate mortgages, didn't they? It's probably just wildly overpriced. So it just goes back to math and just the RV ratios we talk about and the cost of construction and the income levels compared to value, the price to income level. It's just about putting all those things together and just kind of doing a macro analysis. And then once you kind of like the macro, then getting down into the weeds more and more and more and more until you're just doing boots on the ground research and coming to a determination as to A, if you still like it, and then B, if you do like it, what areas and what's the best play here? Is it a good time to buy an Italian villa? Again, pretty much same answer there. I mean, it depends. It depends. What are you getting it for? See, that's one thing about real estate that's a lot different than gold or stocks, in the sense that real estate's very inefficient. So gold, as an example, if it's trading at $2,000 an ounce, you can't get someone to sell. You can't find someone to sell you their gold for $1,500. It's too liquid. So, but with real estate, that's not true. If you have someone that has an apartment, let's say, or condo, that's $200,000, if they're in a bind and if there's no liquidity in the market and mortgages are tough to come by, like Columbia, you could get that for $150. If you're the only one there with cash in hand, you've got all the leverage. You're making money on the buy side there. That's why I always say you make money on the buy side of real estate. So it's tough, but a lot of people like to look at real estate as though it's like gold, like it's just kind of, you know, more black and white, and there's a lot more to it. That's why real estate, it's kind of more like a, I don't know, it's more like a side hustle than it is an investment, because you got to be kind of an expert. And if you're the more expertise you have in it, the easier it is for you to make money in pretty much any market condition. And, you know, I was talking to Kiyosaki about that Friday night, actually. We were talking about real estate, we were talking about Dubai, and we were talking about, you know, he's got most of his stuff in the United States. And we were going through his process of what he does when he writes a book, and then he sells the rights to the book, and then he takes that, and then he levers up. And then he buys real estate with the proceeds there. And that's kind of been his business model for quite some time. And Tuesday night, we're having dinner with Ken McElroy. Because we were talking so much real estate that Robert was like, oh man, I wish Kenny was here. I wish Kenny was here. I wish Kenny was here. So I'm like, yeah, let's just do dinner next week and we'll set it up with the three of us so we can really get into the weeds about some real estate stuff. So anyway, we're doing that Tuesday night.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Okay, Snyder Johnson think there's no good substitute for USD reserve currency. What stops foreigners from transacting in other currencies? We could bypass deflation, go straight to stagflation. Yeah, so you bring up a good point, Craig. And this is another thing that I've talked to Lynn about extensively. And Lynn's opinion is that she totally agrees that there is no substitute, but there might not have to be a substitute. And that other countries can just gradually just start using other stuff. And, you know, you just have this chipping away effect where we wake up in 20 years or 30 years and global trade, or the majority of global trade, isn't done in dollars anymore. It just kind of happens slowly, right? Or maybe it's like going bankrupt. Who is that? The guy who had the quote, I can't remember the name. I'm terrible remembering those guys' names. But you go bankrupt slowly then all at once. And maybe that's how the dollar loses reserve currency status. I think that's kind of what Lynn was saying. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think maybe it's, hey, it loses its reserve status very, very slowly, and then boom, all at once. So Mary's asking, if when I find a motivated seller, do I do all cash? Usually, Mary, I do. And it's just easier, and you've got way more leverage. The buyer, you know, you don't have to worry about the loan going through or dealing with the bank or a third party. If that buyer knows that you've got cash in your hand, I mean, that gives you a lot of negotiating leverage. So how I've done that in the past is I like to set up line of credits against the equity that I have in my properties in the United States. So I'll set up, let's say, a good example of that is when I bought my first place in Colombia. I'll tell you guys that story real quick. Hanging out with Kiyosaki, I'm trying to tell more stories because he's so good at teaching people through stories. I'm trying to incorporate that into my bag of tricks, so to speak. Back in 2015, when I first thought about investing in Colombia, it was because oil was cheap. So if you recall, oil got sub 30 bucks. And as you guys know from watching my videos, that's kind of that chart I always use. That's kind of the line in the sand for me, where I say, okay, oil is quote unquote cheap when it's under 30 bucks adjusted for inflation. And so I'm like, you know, and keep in mind too, this was back in 2015. So I had nowhere close to the knowledge of about investing in macro that I have today. I just started learning the stuff in 2012. So I was only about 3 years into my journey, let's say. So I knew that oil was cheap. And again, I wanted to be like Jim Rogers and have that same mindset. So I wanted to try to buy oil, but I knew nothing about it. I mean, no clue how to, you buy a producer, like I didn't know what was going on. So I'm like, okay, I probably shouldn't be playing in that area because I'm gonna get burned. And so I was in South America, I was in Eastern Europe at the time. I was trying to buy a boutique hotel in Croatia. And so anyway, which didn't end up going through, by the way. But anyway, that's why I was spending a lot of time in Italy and Croatia and Montenegro. But my point is I was looking around, and I saw that the Colombian peso was kind of loosely tied to oil because they have so many oil exports. So I'm like, okay, well, man, the oil is super, super cheap right now. The peso is very cheap compared to the US dollar. And so I'm like, maybe I go long oil by buying an asset denominated in Colombian pesos. And so I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a good thing. Well, the only thing I know how to do is real estate. So there you go. Let's just buy Colombian real estate that's denominated in pesos. That's a way to go long oil, and it's a way to therefore go long the peso. And so if I can get forced appreciation, if I can make money on the buy side, and if I can force appreciation through doing what I do, then you've got that upside, and you have the additional upside of the currency or oil. And if that goes against me, then I've got the buffer, the hedge of the equity build through the real estate. And so that was why I went into real estate in Colombia in the first place. And so I think that the lesson there is you've got to do what you know well. And when you look at real estate, it just goes back to what I was saying too about how there being an extremely inefficient market. And I saw a massively inefficient market. And that's kind of why I've stayed investing in Colombia, because the opportunity is huge, because there's very low liquidity in the market, and therefore there's a lot less downside too. So hopefully, I mean, I know that was kind of off on a tangent and a quick story there, but hopefully that gives you guys some insights. And, you know, ironically, that now when I talk about potentially investing in Dubai real estate, it's the exact same play. The exact same. It's really kind of eerie that I got into Colombian real estate because oil was cheap. And now I'm thinking about getting into Dubai real estate. Why? Because oil's cheap. It's a way to go long oil in a way. It's a way to go long oil in something where I'm an expert. And so we'll see what happens there. Yeah, that's a good question, Conrad. Do RV ratios matter if you're trying to buy your first home? Yeah, because it'll tell you whether or not you should buy or rent. So if you've got a good RV ratio on a house that you're considering living in, then buy it. If it's a bad RV ratio, then rent it to live in. That's a good question. Would I run for public office? Oh, no way. No. No, you guys, if you knew my, how can I say this? My, trying to figure out how I can say this without wildly incriminating myself. my personal life is not conducive to politics. Let's just put it that way. I like to have a little bit too much fun, and I'm not exactly a straight and narrow kind of guy. You know, I like to. Well, we'll leave it at that. That's funny. Oh, here it is. Do you feel more freedom in Colombia or the United States? See, this is interesting, because what you'll find in countries like Colombia is the laws down there, this for better or worse, the laws really aren't laws. They're more like suggestions. So if there's a law that, like, as an example, you can't hold a beer and walk down the sidewalk, which, by the way, is not a law there. I do it all the time, which goes back to why I probably won't run for office. Not a real good image for your local politician to be, you know, walking down the street, saying hi to everyone, slamming beers and having fun. But anyway, where was I? Oh, that's right. So the laws aren't really enforced, right? And where in the United States, usually, and I know there's some latitude here, but if it's a law, you know, it's the cops are out there and just, you know, super, super firm on it. So I know Andrew Henderson has a word for this, and I can't, or a phrase that it describes it very well, but it's just going to a country where, although they may have some weird laws, how strictly are the laws enforced? And again, in Colombia, they're not enforced very much at all. Let me give you another example of that. Fun story. We'll go back to what I'm trying to do with Kiyosaki. So the place where one of the places I bank with a fiduciary called Alianza Valores in Colombia. I wire money there from the United States, and that's kind of how I get my pesos to buy my properties there. And they're about maybe a mile and a half away from where I hang out there in Provenza. But it's not like there's back roads to go there. The road that you have to go on, you have to go down 10, which if any of you have been to Colombia or Parque Arauca, you know where 10 is. And then it hooks up with Poblado Avenue. You got to take a right on Poblado Avenue and drive down. So Poblado Avenue, for those of you who know Scottsdale, it would be the equivalent of Scottsdale Boulevard or the main drag. I mean, whatever your city is, like the main road, that's Poblado Avenue. So it's like four lanes wide, massive traffic. And I was running late, and we were doing the TV show, and we were filming an episode of the TV show. And I had to get to Alianza quick to pick up this check, this cashier check, to buy a property, right? So I was supposed to meet them at the notary to close the deal, which is basically like kind of like a title company. So I was running late. I didn't have time to get a cab. I didn't have time to get an Uber. So what I did is I hopped on one of those electric scooters. I'm sure you guys have seen those that they, you know, you can rent and you just leave them on the sidewalk there or whatever. And you got the app on your phone. And so I'm like, screw it. I'm just going to. So I rented one of these things and I took it down 10 and I took it on Poblado Avenue. Now, again, that might not seem like a big deal. You don't understand. We're talking four lanes go each direction with like semi trucks. And I mean, the speed limit's probably, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 miles per hour, something like that. But I mean, the main congested road in your, you know, wherever you live, just think about riding an electric scooter right down the middle of it, like a motorcycle, no helmet, nothing. In fact, I had my sport jacket on, jeans and sunglasses. That's it. And I took it down a mile or whatever it was down Poblado Avenue, driving straight by cops. And they're just look at, yeah, whatever. Now, that most likely was wildly illegal. like you can't do that. Like no helmet, nothing. And by the way, down there is a helmet law for motorcycles. So you got motorcycles zipping by you and scooters. Gas scooters, and they're legally they have to wear a helmet, but I'm zipping by on an electric scooter, no helmet, in a sport jacket and jeans, sunglasses, going by multiple cops, and they're just, yeah, whatever. You see, that's a story that I think highlights the difference there. So that's why I would say that I think you've got more personal liberty and more personal freedom in a place like Colombia. Even if they don't, you know, they don't have like the First Amendment or something like that, or even if they've got some goofy laws, because the laws, they're not even laws. They're just suggestions. And also, too, that's one of the big benefits of being a gringo down there is even if the cop like pulls you over something, and once he sees you're a gringo, they're like, just don't do it again. Because they don't want to deal with you because they know you can't speak Spanish. It's going to be a big pain in the ass. And they're just like, whatever, take off. Yeah. So anyway, I would vote for Colombia there. Well, what is the one thing that made you rich? Well, I don't think there's one thing, Nicholas. What I tell people, you need to have a few skill sets if you want to make money. And So if I was to break them, there's a lot, but as I was going to break them down into three kind of simple takeaways, three simple fast steps. One, and the most important, is you have to be willing to sacrifice things that other people are not willing to sacrifice. That's first and foremost. So you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, am I willing to give up XYZ? In my case, it was looking yourself in the mirror and saying, am I willing to give up having a family for an extended period of time? You know, there's still maybe some hope for me. I don't know about that. But you see what I'm saying, right? Back in my my 30s or whatever, you got to make a conscious decision because you know you're going to be working 80 hours a week traveling all over the world. And it would be quite literally impossible. Well, it wouldn't be impossible, but it would be very difficult to have a family. So you got to make a decision. Do I want to go to the left on this path or do I want to go to the right? So that's an example of making a sacrifice that most people would not be willing to make. Working 80 hours a week, never taking a day off. And when I mean that, I'm talking about Christmas. I'm talking about Thanksgiving. I'm not just talking about working weekends here and there. I'm talking about never taking a day off for years on end. How many people are willing to make that sacrifice? Probably not many. Everyone wants the end. Everyone wants the lifestyle. Everyone wants the money, the cars, if you're a guy, the women, and they want the freedom. They want all that. And, people look at me as an example and they say, oh, George has all those things. It'd be great to be George. Well, yeah, but you just see George 2020 version. You didn't see George 2000 version or from 2000 to 2012. And if you would have seen that George and seen what that George did, you probably would look at George 2020 and you'd probably say, yeah, not worth it. So that would be number one. Number two is you have to be willing to, well, you have to be very good at problem solving. You have to be an expert problem solver. And number three is you have to be very good at managing people. So again, number one is you have to be willing to sacrifice things other people are not willing to sacrifice. You have to be good at solving problems, an expert. And you have to be extremely good at managing people. If you have those three, and a lot of ambition, of course, but if you have those three things, you're going to do well. You're going to do well. Okay, that is it, guys. I'd like to remind all of you, before I do some shout outs at the end, to go to Rebel Capitalist Pro and check it out. It is the online investment forum I have with Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It'll take your investing to the next level. If you're worried about deflation, inflation, the dollar, gold, Bitcoin, commodities, we talk about all of this stuff at beginner level, intermediate level, and expert level. Check it out. There's a $1 trial offer. You can't beat it. You go there, snoop around. In fact, I'm doing a live stream for the members here in about an hour. I'm doing another live stream with Lynn Alden Tuesday night for the members that you guys could check out if you do that trial thing now. But that's it, georgegammon.com/pro. Thank you very much for all of you hanging out today. I think we had 1,300 people almost on the live stream. Want to do some shout outs to Ultimate Bargains. He's always here. Jeremy, Nick, David, Anthony, Nicholas, SJ, Rigo, Tony, Randy, David, Dwayne, Working People. Angelique is here. My good friend Angelique, who has the most amazing George Gammon, we'll call them inspired t-shirts. You got to check out her t-shirts. They're awesome. The last one she did was Don't Get Kloused. So it's got a picture of Klaus on it, like that Ghostbusters sign. It says Don't Get Kloused. So you got to get that t-shirt. My good buddy, old time buddy right here, Jet Set Horseback. I won't give out his name, but thanks for hanging out, man. Can't wait to see you soon. I might be headed down to California, so if I do, I'll shoot you a text. Atlas, Arthur, good to see you again, Arthur. Upgrade. Sounds like my hair here on the side. VK, David, Nick, J.A., All-Nighter, Martin, Mr. Lynn 99, Seymour, Oriole, Jan. All right, ladies and gents, I appreciate it, and I will see you on the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.